Are you tired of your content not getting the reach it deserves? Change that at Grow With Video Summit. From May 23rd through the 25th, join industry leaders like Gary Vee, Ollie Abdaal, Patrick Bet-David, Cody Sanchez, and more for strategies that will elevate your visibility and engagement. So go to summit.thinkmedia.com to secure your ticket. Just click the link in the description or go to summit.thinkmedia.com. What's changing with podcasts in 2024?
Well, here's the thing. Podcasts are no longer just audio only, and having a visual component is more important than ever. I feel like when you're just starting out, a webcam and a good mic is really all that you need, and you don't need to overcomplicate it. Podcasts make a lot of money, and there's many different ways to monetize a podcast. I think it's really important to decide like what your niche is, what your topics are, and really like stick to that.
Is starting a podcast a viable side hustle this year? Welcome back to the Think Media Podcast. I'm fired up today because we're going to be talking about podcasting in 2024, how YouTube has been disrupting the podcasting space. And really, our guest expert today is the podcast princess and has a lot of insider information for how to start and grow a podcast, as well as also build your network, get great guests. And we're going to be learning more of her story. Hala Taha is the CEO and founder of Yap Media and the host of the Young and Profiting podcast that is consistently on the top charts in entrepreneurship and other categories. She has been doing this for years and is an expert in networking, marketing, social media, personal branding, side hustles, entrepreneurship, and podcasting. So this is going to be a power-packed episode. Hala, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to this conversation.
Let's go big vision. What's changing with podcasts in 2024? What are the new updates? And I was on your website, Yap Media, and it said podcast consumption is changing in your video there. And so, yeah, just what are kind of the big vision of what's happening right now?
Well, here's the thing. Podcasts are no longer just audio only. When podcasts first came out, everybody really associated them with like Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You really listen to it in a podcast player. But now people feel like podcasts can be basically anything, right? So people feel like they're consuming podcasts, even if they watch a short clip on social media. Like if I ask my fans, where do you listen to my podcast? Some of them will be like Instagram, and I'll be like, well, I don't play my full episodes on Instagram, but they feel like they watch my podcast on Instagram because they watch all the little clips, for example. Also, podcasts are now being live streamed more often. So for example, on LinkedIn, I live stream my full episodes on social media. So people, again, when I ask them, where do they consume podcasts? Some people are like, well, I consume it on your LinkedIn. That's where I watch your podcasts, right? So podcasts are no longer audio only. And it's really this cross-channel platform that we're really consuming it on audio, YouTube, social media, and so on. So I feel like that's the major trend with podcasts, is that they're really just no longer audio only. And they're also like highly visual, and having a visual component is more important than ever.
When did you first start the Young and Profiting podcast, and what inspired you to do so?
Yeah. So I started my podcast 6 years ago in April of 2018. And essentially I was in the corporate world. I was a failed entrepreneur. Then I went to corporate super late. And I did very well in corporate because I was basically this intrapreneur within the organization, and I came with a really innovative mindset. And I got promoted 5 times in 5 years and was doing really well. And I was also volunteering within my corporation. So I worked at Hewlett Packard, and I was president of the Young Employee Network. So I kept volunteering as a side hustle within the organization. But then I got passed up for an opportunity to be specifically the Global Young Employee Network president, which I had worked really hard for. And then I realized I need to stop, you know, putting all my eggs in this basket and not growing my own brand, not growing my own thing. And I decided that instead of being a voice for 7,000 employees across Hewlett Packard, I could be a voice for 700,000 people or 7 million people with my own podcast. So I called it Young and Profiting. My goal was to basically use my entrepreneurship experience as well as my corporate experience, the fact that I was, you know, making over 6 figures and was pretty successful in the corporate world, and figure out how I could help others become better. And very different from most podcasters now. When I started, I did not think I was going to make any money. I was just thinking like, this is a creative outlet. I want to be of service. this. And that's really what I put out there in the world, is just this desire to just want to help other people. And that really was magnetic. So the podcast grew really fast as soon as I launched it.
Well, today now you are a very successful entrepreneur and you've built multiple brands. And I want to go back though to, you mentioned you were a failed entrepreneur that kind of went into corporate late. I know a lot of listeners can relate to, maybe they jumped into the entrepreneurship game, the creator economy, and maybe they hit quick success. But the more common story is the toil and the grind and trying to find your thing and trying to find your voice in your content creation, and trying to find the product market fit and all these different challenges that entrepreneurs go through. Tell us a little bit about that story and maybe how that made you better for the success that you're experiencing today, back when you mentioned you were a failed entrepreneur.
Yeah, totally. I would say that the reason why I was successful this time around is because it was a very organic experience. Essentially, everything that I figured out for myself, I would then package up and do for other people. And that's how I've just built this entire company that now, we're on track to make $10 million in revenue this upcoming 2024, and we're crushing it. So I'll give you an example. When I first started my podcast, I've been a leader my whole life. And one of my biggest talents is that I'm always able to recruit a volunteer team that basically works for free for me. And I did this all throughout my teens, my college years, and then even with this podcast in 2018, I started it off that way. Now it's a proper company. But essentially, by episode 2, I had my first basically intern or volunteer. By episode 8, I had 20 volunteers in a Slack channel, and that was the start of my company, Yap Media. And I basically had 20 volunteers that worked for free for me for 2 years to grow my podcast while I worked a full-time corporate job. So from the start, I designed Yap as something that could run without me because I was working a day job, as something that was highly organized and had lots of SOPs. And I basically would teach everybody how to do every aspect of the podcast. I would teach, one guy had to audio edit, one guy had to do my websites, another person had to do social, video marketing, whatever. I was a marketer, so I had those skills, and people worked for free for me for 2 years. So once the podcast started to grow, we were a top 10 how-to podcast, from the very beginning. I would have these great guests come on my show. And at the end of the conversation, they would always ask me, Hala, who does your LinkedIn? How did you grow your LinkedIn so large? Who does your podcast? How did you grow this podcast? And I'd always kind of turn them away and be like, I'm sorry, I've got a volunteer team, I can't help you. Until finally, once COVID hit, I found myself with more time. I was working from home. I had no commute. I also had a father who was basically dying in the hospital. And that made me realize life is so short. I better do something about it. Take agency over my life, take these opportunities. And I started my company during COVID. So the same guests that would come on my show ended up becoming my clients. And that's how I would convert people. And so again, I started with LinkedIn first because I had become an influencer on LinkedIn and figured that out. Then I moved into podcast production. I had figured out how to put out an amazing show and audio edit and create videos and all these things. So I kind of productized that, started selling that. Then, fast forward to now where I have my number one podcast network, I essentially figured out how to grow my show, grow the other shows I produced. And then I started getting sponsors and selling our shows out. Before I knew it, now I had a podcast network that I could then kind of recruit podcasts and do the same thing for other people. So again, it's basically just figuring out how to do things for myself really well, creating SOPs around that, and then launching products and services around that. The other key thing, which is a lot of entrepreneurs are doing this, are starting their businesses this way, is that I'm a creator first, and I basically create audiences, and then I ask them what they want from me. I don't just create a product or a service and cross my fingers and hope that people want it. I always put out things for example, my LinkedIn masterclasses, because everybody asked me for a masterclass. So I put one out there, right? So it's really getting feedback from my audience and really being a community centered first in terms of my priorities.
I love that. And can we go a little bit deeper? Inspiring to hear you said you've always been a leader. I'm curious, how much do you think that leadership is genetics and nature or nurture, and also maybe some intentional things you did for those that, again, maybe don't have the same level of natural leadership talent, but how could they start thinking a little bit different to rally a team, maybe cast some vision while resources are low, just like you did around their YouTube channel, online business, podcast?
Yeah, 100%. So I was always a leader since I was a little girl. I remember my mom said I started my first business when I was 4 years old and I would get all my cousins to like draw pictures and then I would like sell them to all the parents. Like I was always an entrepreneur, always selling something, coming up with some sort of scheme and like mobilizing people to help me get my goal accomplished. So for me, I do feel like it's a natural thing. However, I will say that there is a role of leadership for every single person where you can thrive. And what makes me a great leader also probably makes me a terrible leader. I'll give you a great example. Like I'm a very like motivational person. I can inspire people, but I'm very fast, right? And so anybody who's slowing me down, I might not be the most compassionate leader where I'm going to like take the time to like explain things to them or like take them hand by hand. Like I'm running, right? And I need people to run with me. Whereas my business partner, Kate, is the opposite of me and is able to be patient and is a humble leader. And she's an equally great leader, right? So everybody has leadership aspects that they can lean into and improve upon as well, right? So for me, I'm really good at like mobilizing a team, but I need other leaders that help me like scale my team as we grow to make sure that we are we've got clear operations and everybody like has a great company culture and everything along the way. I'm good at like having a vision and like initially getting people together and like executing and taking action, right? So basically, long story short, I feel like everybody has their own strengths as a leader that they can basically lean into.
Is there any person you've interviewed and any author or book in particular that's really influenced you as it pertains to growing as a leader?
If I could think of somebody who's really inspired me, I would say Marshall Goldsmith. He's also one of my clients and he's one of the top leadership experts in the world. And he's a great leader because he exudes this like humbleness and he's like very good natured. And I feel like for me, that's really inspiring to try to emulate.
Is starting a podcast a viable side hustle this year?
This is a really great question. So podcasts make a lot of money and there's many different ways to monetize a podcast. But a lot of people set off with their podcast thinking that their first way of making money is going to be through sponsorships. And that is an extremely unrealistic goal. If you want to monetize your podcast, you really need to be getting at least 100,000 downloads a month before, you know, it's meaningful to make money on a podcast. So the way that it works when you're getting sponsorships is it's very standardized in podcasts. You get paid per 1,000 downloads. And that average CPM, that's what it's called, CPM, is $22. So you could put, you know, 4 commercials on a podcast and you make $22 per 1,000 listeners for each commercial. So it really only adds up once you have a large volume. And it's actually very difficult to get that many subscribers on your podcast, right? There's I would say there's probably only 5,000 podcasts in the whole world that are actually monetizing right now. So in my opinion, it is very unrealistic to think that you're going to start right now and build a podcast that's going to be able to get sponsorships unless you're already an influencer that has an audience or you're able to invest in media buying and grow your show with podcast player buys where you advertise within the podcast players or you advertise on other commercials on other podcasts or you have a service where you get guest appearances on other podcasts just like I'm doing on your show. That's really how you're going to grow your podcast listener base. So to start from scratch with no existing community or no financial resources as a podcaster today in 2024, it is going to be a pretty long, difficult journey for you to get to a point where you're going to be able to monetize with sponsorships. However, you can monetize your podcast through the guests that you have on your show. So let's say you have a business and you create a podcast where you actually are interviewing your ideal target client. That is going to be a great way to build trust, to have like a conversation opener, a door opener, to get to know somebody and get to know a potential client where you can basically soft sell your services. You can mention it throughout your interview in terms of what you do. You can mention it a little bit up front in your emails and so on. So they get a taste of what you do and they get to know you personally. And that often will lead to business. So for example, when I launched my podcast, the first way I monetized, like I was saying earlier, is the guests that would come on my show ended up becoming my clients. Then suddenly I was making a ton of money and I could invest in the growth of my show with media buying and things like that. So actually my business started first and then I used my, the investments from the profit of my business to grow my podcast. So I feel like that's a more realistic way to do it, to actually design your podcast in a way where it makes money, even if you don't have an audience yet.
In 2018, when you started, was it audio only?
It was. When I first started, it was audio only. And there was many reasons for that. I feel like video was still like starting to come out. At this point in time, audiograms were popular, right? Remember that? So audiograms were popular at that time. So I really leaned into that. And then also, for my own personal reasons of practice, I wanted to be able to look at my notes. I was like more shy. I needed to get my reps up. So I wasn't even comfortable to be on camera yet. So I don't really regret doing audio only, because also I was doing my podcast like at lunch in like, you know, the closet at Disney. Like I was doing my podcast like everywhere I could. And I still had a job. So audio only worked out for me in the beginning.
So then what year did you start to do video, and what was the production complexity of doing that?
It was super simple. Again, I always like start small and kind of just like add on to it. So I think I started my videos probably in late 2019, early 2020. So just like a 2 years probably after I started my podcast, I really started to get into video. And like I had big clunky headphones. I just used like a C2922, like a one of those Logitech webcams that are like $100 or less. And I just, you know, got started. I think one of the big things with podcasting is that people overcomplicate it, right? I feel like when you're just starting out, a webcam and a good mic is really all that you need, and you don't need to overcomplicate it. Now, fast forward to me being a popular podcaster, I got a studio and I have a backdrop and lights and a teleprompter and all these things. But that was after I started to, you know, fully monetize my podcast. So I feel like you can kind of grow it slowly and evolve over time. And that's totally cool.
The Verge said that YouTube is the most used podcasting platform. What are you seeing for the future, and what strategy are you applying as YouTube has rolled out podcasts, like kind of integration, ability to mark videos as a podcast, and that can go to YouTube Music? I believe that they're going to absorb Google Music and make it YouTube Music, making a play at Spotify, and even being an RSS feed themselves, potentially allowing people to shift away from Libsyn or Buzzsprout. What are your thoughts on the moves that YouTube is making to dominate the podcast space, and how are you being agile to what you see coming?
Yeah, so I'm super bullish on YouTube. So here's a couple like stats about the podcasting industry that I think are really helpful. 51% of podcast listeners only started listening to podcasts within the last 2 years. And these 51% of podcast listeners skew really young. They skew under age 30. Okay. So podcast listeners are like Gen Z or like, you know, young millennials. They prefer to watch their podcasts on video. I think 65% of them prefer to watch their podcasts on video. 52% of them are following their favorite podcaster on social media. So they're more likely to watch on video. They're more likely to follow their host on social media. And these new podcast listeners, now YouTube is tied for first place as their top listening platform, as you were just mentioning. So they like to also watch their podcasts on YouTube, right? So as a podcaster, monetizing your podcast through a simulcast is like super hot. All the sponsors want a podcast that not only have an audio podcast, but also have a YouTube podcast, because that's where the clicks and conversions are really happening, right? Podcasts are really great for top funnel awareness. So people are listening to a commercial on a podcast. They're remembering the brand. They're having brand recognition. They might even go on Google and like search for the brand later on. And then maybe weeks later, finally have a purchasing decision. But when they're hearing about the brand on YouTube or on social media, if they're watching a live stream or a clip, they might actually go click and buy right that second, because they're actually in the mode to scroll, click, and buy. Where when they're listening to podcasts, they might be washing the dishes or on the commute or walking their dog. They're not really on the phone clicking and buying, right? So simulcasts for that reason are super hot, because people are in the mode to click and buy. So when it comes to like a podcast that gets sponsorships, having a simulcast is super interesting for sponsors. So for me, go ahead. You had a question?
No, keep it going.
Okay, I was going to say, so for me, I'm super bullish about growing my YouTube channel. And like probably a lot of your listeners know, growing a YouTube channel is expensive in general compared to like starting an audio podcast, for example. Very low lift, tech is very minimal on an audio podcast. For YouTube, you know, you have to have super high quality videos, super high quality production. You've got to figure out how to do the SEO. You've got to figure out an ad strategy. There's so much involved in it. But in my opinion, it is totally worth it, because if you're able to get sponsors on the audio side, they'll just buy the simulcast commercials. So for me, it's like a no-brainer to try to grow YouTube channels. What was the other question that you had about YouTube specifically?
Just your approach, like maybe what you see coming in the next 12 months in light of all of this, what you're applying to your podcast and really your video podcast.
So basically on the podcast front, YouTube is behind. So right now, everybody on the audio side, when it comes to monetization, we're all using dynamic ad insertion on the audio side. And basically what that means is that when you play a commercial on your audio podcast, it plays throughout the entire back catalog. So if somebody's listening to episode one, they're going to hear the same commercial that they hear if they're listening to your latest episode. So the commercial plays no matter what episode is on, the same commercial that you have for that week or that month plays throughout all of the content. YouTube right now is in a place where everything is baked in and embedded as far as commercials. So this makes a very clunky experience. You get a brand that's going to sponsor you for a month on the audio podcast. You can basically just turn it on and it plays on all of your audio episodes. And you basically have insertion markers for where those commercials play on every single audio episode. And it's all like automated. Right? On YouTube, it's a very clunky experience. You've got to then bake it into all your new episodes. You've got to sell it where you've got like different audio YouTube impressions versus, you know, your audio impressions. And it's just a really clunky experience. So in the future, I imagine that YouTube is going to allow you to do dynamic ad insertion on the video side so that when you're selling sponsorships, you're selling the same thing on audio and video, whereas now the simulcast sponsorship experience is a very clunky manual thing. So I feel like number one, that's the biggest thing that YouTube needs to figure out is how can they do dynamic ad insertion so that you can continue to monetize your episodes, even like, because a lot of, especially on YouTube, you'll have episodes from like 2 years ago that are probably still like going viral and getting views, right? You're unable to monetize that with actually host read ads. You can monetize that through like YouTube's ad revenue, but not through your own host read ads, because you actually can't edit a video once you publish it on YouTube. And that is a big drawback when it comes to ads and monetization. So for me, I feel like that's the number one thing that podcasters, like professional podcasters, are hoping that YouTube fixes, because that's the number one reason why it's just not a consistent thing in terms of getting sponsorships across your podcast, no matter what channel it's on. Because like I was saying earlier, podcasts are no longer audio only, but basically the like advertising and technology hasn't really caught up to that yet.
It's fascinating. So question for, how do you pitch brands right now? I checked out a recent audio episode for you, and I heard the dynamic ads at the beginning for sponsors. And then that same podcast on video cut straight into a hook, which would also, I would argue, even if they can add dynamic ads, is best practice. I suppose if it's a pre-roll and YouTube lets you kind of took over that. But as far as in the content itself on YouTube, I've noticed you're doing these fancy hooks and intros that really, you had Robert Kiyosaki on, it really grabs attention. It's really dramatic. It's just kind of two different places. So how are you in this moment, knowing that that's a problem that they hopefully remedy in the future, communicating to brands when it comes to what you're offering them in the YouTube version versus dynamic ads? Imagine being in the room with some of today's top personal brands, video marketing experts, and online entrepreneurs. This year, you will have that chance at growwithvideolive.com. Grow With Video Live is the number one conference for building your personal brand and growing your business with online video. This year's speakers include Dave Ramsey, Pat Flynn, Shalene Johnson, the Think Media team, and many more. So go to growwithvideolive.com to get your ticket today.
Yeah, we basically have to sell it like differently. So audio is, we are like selling monthly, typically dynamic ad flights where sponsors are buying out impressions for the audio podcast for the entire month, right? On YouTube, basically we're saying we'll guarantee you like X amount of impressions for the month across all of our new episodes only. And then we basically embed the commercial until we hit the impressions. But again, it's just not perfect. On the audio side, I can turn it off. If I say I'm going to give you 500,000 impressions at 500K, I can automatically turn it off. They get no more. But on YouTube, it's kind of like I got to play the game. Like, hopefully I hit it and they're going to go over because I have to bake in the episode and basically give them an estimate of my average episodes get, you know, 20,000 views a video. If I have 8 new videos a month, you're going to get 160,000 impressions for the month on YouTube. And then I basically have to insert the commercials until I hit that point. So again, it's like this very manual process on YouTube, which prevents a lot of podcasters from ever even getting, you know, simulcast sponsorships because they don't have the resources to kind of track all of those things, right? Or it's not big enough as something you actually want to go after.
And would technically, once you fulfilled that on YouTube, the brand just continue to benefit from your back catalog? Are you still monetizing that through like an affiliate relationship, or do they just continue to benefit from your, six months ago, they're still watching the video and the brand continues to benefit.
Yeah, they just continue to benefit. And that's why sponsors do like, a lot of sponsors love the baked in because they know that they continue to benefit, but it's not great for the podcaster. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, it's like a lot of the sponsors, you want them to be long-term sponsors that renew. So if I overperform, that's actually a good thing because most likely they'll keep sponsoring me and then it doesn't matter if their commercials are on my old episodes.
When you got started podcasting, what were some of the biggest challenges you faced? And thinking about those that are starting and maybe some of the mindsets and emotions and feelings that people go through, what were some of those for you and how'd you overcome them?
Yeah, I think the biggest one was just feeling like I was stagnant in my growth. I remember I started in 2018. My LinkedIn blew up well before my podcast. I was like the number one podcaster on LinkedIn. I was like this big influencer that was getting a lot of comments and shares and DMs and a lot of attention. And then I felt like my podcast, even though everybody knew me for my podcast, was just stagnant in its growth. And I remember, you know, being really jealous of everybody on the Apple charts who started in 2015 and 2016. And I felt like I was never going to be able to get visibility on the Apple charts. And it wasn't until I stopped obsessing about Apple that I actually became successful in the podcast world, because I realized that there was like 70 other apps out there. There's CastBox, there's Player FM, there's Google Play. And I realized like Apple's not the only game in town. What if I dominated one of the other apps? And then maybe people would find me that way. And so I decided that I was going to trade and leverage my LinkedIn audience. So this is one of the first like scrappy campaigns that I did. And I remember it was like 2020. And basically I reached out to CastBox and Riverside.fm and Podyssey and literally every podcast brand that I could think of, whether it was the equipment, the recording software, the hosting software, any brand that I used related to podcasts, any podcast player. And I said, hey, like I've got this audience on LinkedIn. I have 100,000 followers. Now I have way more than that. But back then, I'll post on my LinkedIn in exchange for you featuring me in your app, in exchange for you featuring me in your email, in exchange for you featuring me in your website. Then all of a sudden, all the podcast apps and players featured me. I was doing like these promotions. Some of them like really stuck, like CastBox now. I've got 300,000, almost 400,000 subscribers on CastBox alone and over 6 million downloads on that one app alone. And it's just because they sponsored me when I first started. And that's how I really became a top podcaster. When I first came out and became the podcast princess and got on the cover of Podcast Magazine, I wasn't even huge on Apple yet. I was just a really big podcaster on CastBox and I found my lane doing that, right? So I feel like getting creative, realizing that there's not only just one path to success. And for me, it was like that mental block of realizing like Apple's not the only game in town. So for other people listening, it could be YouTube or TikTok or like there's some other gap in the market that you can fill. Even like looking back, me becoming the number one podcaster on LinkedIn was me creative problem solving because Instagram was so saturated, there's no way I was going to be the top podcaster on Instagram, but LinkedIn had a lane that was wide open. So it's like, where can you fit in and realizing there's really not only one path to success?
That's such a cool story. And, you know, our company's called Think Media and we encourage people to think outside of the box and think different. And so your approach to have this kind of innovative, scrappy campaign on LinkedIn is really cool. And we're going to cover your tips for creating engaging content, maybe dealing with negative comments or reviews, maybe some tools and as much as we can cover. But I do want to touch on that because one of the things we talked about ahead of time is you really help people with LinkedIn. You have a LinkedIn masterclass and you've generously provided a promo code. If people want to check it out, they can use the promo code THINK and we'll put details in the description and the show notes. But why LinkedIn? What is the opportunity there right now for professionals, for content creators, for influencers that maybe they're ignoring or don't even realize exists?
Yeah. So LinkedIn is a huge opportunity and it's an opportunity that a lot of people are sleeping on. And it's still like a completely hackable platform with organic reach. So there's 135 million daily active users on LinkedIn and less than 6% of people are actually publishing original content. So this is huge. 135 million active daily users, less than 6% of people are actually content creators on LinkedIn. So there's just a lot of people reading, absorbing, right? And LinkedIn is branded as this professional website, but people are talking about everything on LinkedIn. They're talking about news. They're talking about their personal life. They're using it like Instagram and Facebook now, not just a professional site. The other thing is that the people on LinkedIn are this like really high quality people. There's no bots on LinkedIn. You need to be a real person. So it's not this problem on Instagram where you don't know who's real, who's not. LinkedIn is literally everybody's a real person with a bio, right? People are college educated typically. They're making $75,000 or more. And they're also primed for having sales conversations. People are on LinkedIn who are either entrepreneurs, corporate professionals who need their problems to be solved. And they're actually using LinkedIn in their buying journey to do their research, to research the companies they might want to work with. And so having sales conversations in the DMs is actually super receptive to people and not really a spammy experience, especially if you're able to establish relevancy and common ground and you reach out to them in a targeted manner. And then speaking of targeted manner, LinkedIn's one of the only sites where you can actually really search audience members by keywords, titles, locations, company revenue. There's like all these different attributes that you can search upon, which are totally different than Instagram or Facebook, where you can really just search by keyword. You can actually search people by their different attributes. And so these are all the types of things that I teach in my course, how to find your leads, engage with them, go viral, and so on.
That's amazing. So we'll link to that. You've got a masterclass, and I think people can get like 30% off or so if they use the promo code THINK. And we'll put details in the show notes. But what exactly is that? A couple day event? People go through it with you?
Yeah. So basically, it's a 2-day live masterclass. Now, my agency, Yap Media, we're known as the number one LinkedIn marketing agency. So I'm literally running all the LinkedIn influencer profiles on LinkedIn. So like Heather Monahan, Matt Higgins, Kim Perrell, like you name it. My team is actually the one behind like all these influencers, Marshall Goldsmith, whatever. So basically, you are learning on day one how to develop your personal brand. So I'm walking you through all these exercises, whether you need a refresh of your brand or just starting from zero. We're figuring out who your target audience is. We're doing competitor analysis. And I'm like walking you through all these exercises so you can develop your voice guidelines, which is super important for social media and for branding and consistency. Then I walk you through like your visual identity and what you need to know about graphic design. We talk about copywriting and I give you like the same viral copywriting templates that I give my team at Yap Media. So day one is foundational, your personal brand design and copywriting primarily. And then day two is like algorithm, hacking the algorithm, publishing and engagement strategies, content strategy, and then sales for LinkedIn. So DM invite campaigns, which are incredibly important for a successful business on LinkedIn.
I love it. So again, if you want to check that out, check out the show notes, Think Media Podcast. But let's hit a few more of these tips for dominating podcasts. What are your tips for creating engaging content that resonates now that you've been doing this for so long?
Well, for me, I have an interview show and I think it's really important to decide like what your niche is, what your topics are, and really like stick to that. Because I feel like right now there's basically a podcast for everything and you want to figure out like, how can I differentiate from everybody else? So for example, like right now, like I'm Palestinian, right? And everybody is like, you should be posting, you should be, you know, putting stuff up on your podcast about that conflict. And while I am posting about it on social and other platforms. My podcast is not a politics podcast. I promise my audience that it's a business podcast, and it's basically for millennials who want to be young and profiting. And we talk about business. So it's like, no, I'm not going to post about politics, because that's how you lose your audience and become inauthentic, right? So I feel like just really understanding your lane, understanding your mission, the way that you want to transform your audience and the key topics you're going to talk about, and just stick to that. The more that you can be like strict, the more magnetic you're going to be, because people know exactly what they're signing up for. And I feel like right now there's so many podcasts that just seem to be about anything, right? You've got to get specific and sort of niche down. What are you exactly going to talk about? And I even want to get more specific with my podcast so that it's super clear and people feel really compelled to tune in, because they know exactly what they're going to get.
When you were starting, now you have more resources, and you mentioned rallying a team of volunteers. But when you were starting and resources were tight and you had a full-time job, how did you stay consistent with your content creation schedule?
Yeah, that was really just putting myself on like a really strict regimen. So I had a full-time corporate job. I would wake up about an hour early every day to do an hour of work before I got ready for work on my podcast. And typically what I would do actually is create my social post of the day. Because what's the one thing that you can't do while you're like on the go? It's really like creating graphics and video. Like that's the thing that you have to do like when you're sitting down. Whereas like writing a caption or copy, you could do that on the train. You could do that at the coffee shop. But when it came to like actually creating images or graphics, that was the one thing I would need to like prepare in the morning before I went to work, right? So I would do that on the train. I used to give myself a goal of my one job on the train was to publish my social post of the day. That's how I grew my LinkedIn following, is I did it every day on the train. I would actually publish my post, and on the way home, I would do all my community engagement. My whole job was just responding to DMs and comments on the way home. So that's what I did every day to get my social off the ground. And then I built in, you know, being able to interview my podcast guests at lunch, right? So I would do a lot of my interviews at lunch. And then, like I said, from the start, I was really training interns and a volunteer team. And I feel like a lot of people could use the help and don't ask for it. You can ask for help. And as long as you're teaching other people skills, valuable skills that they can then use later on in their life, you'd be surprised of how many people would work for free for you as long as you were able to teach them something, right? So if you already know how to create your podcast A to Z, I would highly recommend that you look for interns or volunteers who may want to learn those skills to actually help you so that you can focus on more strategic things.
The biggest fears in the world is one of the biggest fears is the fear of public speaking. And it's mentioned as the world's number one phobia. And it's believed to affect 75% of people. 1 out of 4 people are afraid of public speaking. And on top of that, they're also afraid of rejection. Now, amplify that by social media, negative comments, feedback. You've been doing this for a long time. How have you processed dealing with negative comments or negative reviews? Anything from surface level to maybe actual attacks or very personal things that people may say on the internet? And what are some tips you have for those that are kind of afraid of putting themselves out there or afraid of the pushback they might get?
Yeah. Well, this is something that's like very difficult to deal with. I feel like if I try to remember what are the negative comments that I get? The negative comments I always get is always about like my appearance, right? It's never about like the quality of my show or the questions that I ask. It's always like, what happened to your hair today? Or like, why are you wearing so much lip gloss, right? It's always something so like random. And for me, I just kind of just try to put those types of comments to the side. And back to your question about like, how can you show up your best self and get over like this imposter syndrome or, you know, not being confident in yourself of speaking? It goes back to prep, right? And I feel like when I first started my podcast, I was obsessed with preparing. I would study like 20 hours per interview Nowadays, like I spend 2 hours and I've got a research team and like all this help. But back then, my way to feel confident was actually to feel overprepared. And so it didn't mean that I was like reading my notes verbatim or anything like that. It was more so taking the time to actually fully absorb and get smart, because I feel it's competence that breeds confidence, right? So for me, it was all about just getting as smart as possible about the guest, about the questions that I was going to ask. I would literally script out, and I still do this to this day. I script out every single question, follow-up questions. And even if I don't use it, it just helps me feel prepared, which is what gives me the actual confidence to do a good job. So it's all about feeling prepared. And then I would say reps, right? Get in your reps. If that means that before you even launch your podcast, you do 10 episodes just for practice, do it, right? Just do it for practice and see where you go. I feel like people don't realize that like you're allowed to suck when you start, and practice is what's going to make you get better. So I feel like practice and being prepared are the two best ways, I feel like, to get confidence before you start a podcast.
One of the most disruptive forces right now is AI, and it's very controversial. Some people are thinking AI is a net negative to society, and that maybe we'll be destroyed by the machines at some point, and that there's a lot of drama around graphic designers and the ethics of graphic design around AI. And then on the other hand, practical AI tools are, I believe, pretty essential for content creators because they help us go faster. What is your feelings, maybe big picture on that? And is there anything practically you see for podcasters that makes it easier today to maybe get more done in less time as it pertains to new tools and technology?
Definitely. I love AI. So as you guys, you might hear it in my voice, I sound really nasally, right? So I got deviated septum surgery like 4 weeks ago, and so I'm still recovering. And one of the things that I've charged my team with is to actually create an AI version of my voice that we're already starting to use. And I'm going to do this for my entire network. So basically, we're creating voice models for all of our different podcasters. And the goal of this is not to replace our podcasters, but to be able to do commercials and pre-rolls and whatever we need to do in case somebody gets sick. Because as a podcaster, it's like, if you're sick, it really screws you up, right? Even now with me, I'm like slightly nasally. I hate to record anything right now because I'm like, I don't sound like myself, right? So this AI generated version of our host read voices, I think it's going to really come in handy for when people get sick, right? So I feel like there's practical use cases. I love to use AI for graphics. Again, AI, in my opinion, I feel like it's really good for like ideation, for inspiration, not necessarily for like any final output. I feel like it gets you like 80% of the way, and then you've got to like kind of look at it and have like a QA and a review and make sure that everything is okay, because it's not a smart person actually working on this. It's basically, you know, this magic tool that is popping out something that is not going to be 100% accurate or complete. So we're using AI to get ideation and inspiration for our graphics, but we're not actually using AI to complete graphics A to Z. We're also using AI for video generation and for Reels clips. And it's just a really excellent way, I think, to generate a mass amount of content. And now that it's so competitive and everybody's doing it, you kind of have to use AI so that you can keep up with everybody and the amount of content that you need nowadays.
Agree. And some powerful tips. One of the things when someone looks at your show, they might look at the Think Media podcast or other shows, they might feel like they can't compete because they can't get famous guests or celebrity guests. Do you have any tips for how you built up your influence to do so? When I look at some of the guests that are well known on your channel, like a Susie Orman or Robert Kiyosaki, or in the entrepreneur space, Alex Ramosi or Cody Sanchez, how do you get celebrity guests? And what are your tips for people just starting?
Yeah. So I, from the start, had like really high standards. So from the start, when I first started my podcast, I did a list of like the top 30 people I wanted to interview. And I reached out to all of them. Everybody said no, except two people. And those were the first two people I interviewed, right? And then I had like a standard, and I could say, hey, like David Allen came on my show. Would you like to come on my show? And it would be like David Allen's friend, Chris Voss, who then said yes. And then I could leverage his name for the next person. So basically, I just didn't start like low. I set my bar really high. And then I just decided that this is the level that I'm going to stay at and I'm not going to go backwards. And I realized that it was a volume game, right? So I could reach out to 1,000 people. And if two people said yes, that's really all that I needed. So I just kept playing this volume game. I think the other thing is that now that there's more competition, you need to have something of value. Let's say your podcast is not big yet, but do you have an email list? Do you have a social media channel that you can leverage? How can you express to the guests that you want that you're going to make it worth their time? The other thing that I did when I was first starting out was I told my story. I help people understand why they should believe in me. Like, hey, my podcast is not big yet, but I used to have this really big hip hop blog site. And this is not my first rodeo. This is my fifth show. It's just my first podcast, right? So it's like, I also told my story of like why I'm likely to be successful. You should take a chance on me. Right. So I feel like those are some tips. The other thing I'd say is reach out to people where they're not getting bombarded. So on LinkedIn specifically, when I first started, people really weren't reaching out to celebrities on LinkedIn. Now it's like Twitter, I feel like, is that now people are no longer really reaching out to people on Twitter, maybe leverage Twitter instead of Instagram. So it's like get creative in terms of how and where you're going to be reaching out to people. Last tip is actually look at people's promotion cycles. Who's coming out with a new book? Who has a new TV show coming out? That person is actually going to be ready and mobilized to do interviews and maybe might be willing to go on a smaller show because it's already part of their schedule to go on all of these interviews and have this like interview tour, basically.
Makes a lot of sense. You know, you'll see someone like a Tony Robbins come out of appearing, what seems like hiding right now to be on lots of people's shows. And sure enough, his newest financial book is coming out simultaneously. And so different people go on those promotional cycles, thinking about that. Such powerful tips. Well, I want to have you give a few shout outs where people can follow you. And then I want to end with the mindset that's maybe little known, talked about when it comes to entrepreneurship. When people see your success, they see maybe the numbers, they see what you've built up over years. And a lot of times we talk a lot about just winning and all the good, and it's less talked about maybe the grit that it takes. And so we'll end there. But before we get there, give kind of a roll call. I just want to acknowledge you for taking the time and adding so much value to our community. Where can people follow you, connect with you, maybe a list of things that we'll, of course, summarize in the show notes?
Sure. Thank you, Sean. So first of all, I would love for you guys to listen to my podcast. It's called Young and Profiting. I have new episodes twice a week and I interview the brightest minds in the world. And I, you know, care a lot about my podcast. It's awesome content. So check us out on the audio podcast on YouTube. You guys can also find more about my company, Yap Media, at yapmedia.io. If you guys want more information about that course, you can go to yapmedia.io/course if you want information about the LinkedIn masterclass. And like Sean said, you can use code THINK for 35% off, I believe it is. So you can enjoy that discount. And if you guys want to follow me on LinkedIn, it's search my name is Hala Taha, and Instagram is Yap with Hala.
Awesome. So check all of Hala's resources out. And then mindset. It's maybe not as much talked about. My wife, Sonia, of 18 years, I was just thinking, I should have taken a picture last night. We're currently remodeling a house that's up the street, and because we're breaking at the seams, we got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. We need more space. We're actually in a 1,300 square foot place right now, which we're incredibly grateful for. We're going to flip it to a short-term rental, but it's cramped. Oh, our 1-year-old is sleeping in the bathroom, and so my wife's office is actually our bedroom, and so papers and bills, and she's our CFO, so it's tax time, and she's uploading all these documents for state taxes. And we're going through all of these details. And I was thinking, it is 10:45 p.m. I got my eye mask on. I just put the kids down to bed. And I'm thinking, man, this is what it is. Like, we're here. Our bed is covered. We got, you know, we got documents. We're thinking about stuff. We had our biggest year of hiring last year. And I was like, I don't know how appealing this is. I think a lot of people maybe want to be watching Hulu or Netflix right now or just going to sleep. But sometimes, especially during certain seasons of the year, you got to put in the work and team and systems, that all comes. But what's been the real journey? If you just speak to maybe the mindset you've learned or the lesser known talked about pressures that you've had to carry on your journey to experience the success you've had.
It's a really deep question. I think what first comes to mind to me is like, I worked like a dog the first 4 years that I put out this podcast and this company. It's been 6 years. So for 4 years, literally every weekend, Saturday and Sunday, woke up super early. I was working a full-time job. I would stay up till 1 a.m. I was at the time with a boyfriend who also worked really hard on his career. So it worked out for me where we kind of like work side by side till like 1 a.m. together, right? And so it was just like brutal, consistent, hard work. It impacted my relationships and I was okay with that. I knew that I was going to have to separate from some of my old friends who didn't have the same dreams, you know, but that's how I built all my success. I basically built like a moat around me because all I did was just work so, so, so hard, just take action, 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 grow my team. And took every opportunity that I could, took every opportunity I could to record, took every opportunity I could to learn about the industry, to throw myself into it, to become the best podcaster I could, to become the best marketer that I could for 4 years. And then I got some success. And then I realized that like, okay, I built this company. I'm like the podcast princess now. I have the dream that I wanted, the top podcast. I built a company that now I could scale. And maybe I could turn down the volume just like a little bit and, you know, find the love of my life and reconnect with my friends and build better friendships that fit my life now and so on. So it's like now I have different priorities. I'm still working really hard, but I'm not working like I was before because that's not sustainable, right? But I needed to do that because if I didn't do that, I would have never been able to quit my job and really become an entrepreneur and really become successful because it takes sacrifice to become successful. And I really did sacrifice for 4 years. And like everybody saw it. Like I literally worked every single weekend and they were like, you're going to build something crazy because you're working while everyone's playing. And I'm like, I know, right? And I did. So I feel like people just need to realize that sometimes for a period of your life, you really got to just sacrifice. And if you've got a big audacious goal and you want to achieve it, that might take some sacrifice temporarily. But then you've got to be able to know when that switches off so you don't burn yourself out and you can keep growing, but maybe at a little bit of a slower pace, right? So basically, I feel like I accelerated my career 10 years in those 4 years. And now I can kind of chill back and enjoy my life. And I've got a lot more flexibility and I have a lot more fun and things are a lot more balanced. So I feel like that's my answer. That's what came to mind with your question.
Grateful for you, Hala. Incredible and very inspiring. A Think Media podcast. Remember to like, rate, and review this episode. If you're on YouTube, love your feedback in the comments or wherever you listen. Can't wait to connect with you in a future episode. Check out the show notes. And I am Sean Cannell, your guide to building a profitable YouTube channel. We'll talk soon.